for his first CD that he just put out, and it's really creative. I would love to send you just a copy because of the way it's packaged.
Mm-hmm.
He took a photograph of himself and then made it poster size, wrote all the lyrics all over the poster to each song. So it kind of looks graffiti because it's against a subway wall. And then folded the poster so that that's the cover for the CD.
Mm-hmm.
And stuck the CD, you know, inside. So when you unfold the poster, it's got a little piece of rubber where you can just keep the CD secure.
Right.
To it, and then it's pretty cool. And then there's like this Velcro belt around it. It's really clever.
Do you remember when you were a kid, albums that you bought that had, like, posters or inserts or stuff they gave you with
a
record that you put on your bedroom, like what?
Oh,
wall?
I'm trying to think. Herman's Hermits. That's scary.
Oh, Square. Yeah.
Well, that was when I was, like, 9 or 10.
No, Yeah, you're forgiven. I had crappy albums.
It was out of, what was that magazine, Bob? Beat? No, not Beat.
You're forgiven.
Yeah.
For your musical taste and the chronology that you listened to it.
Yeah, it was scary.
We're going to really fucking use that against you.
What was that movie, though? You took all the photographs out of it? I remember it was Bob's referred to it before. Magazine.
Flipside?
Yeah, Flipside. Flipside.
Yeah.
And they came with a bunch of pictures so you could pull them out and put them up on your walls. There were headshots of all the hot singers that you hope weren't lip singing.
Hip Parader? No, which one? Flipside. I don't think she was reading Flipside when she was a teen.
Okay, guys, fucking attention. Attention. Evan's in the house. Yay. Hello, Evan.
Yay. Hey, Gabe.
Yay.
Evan's biggest fan. We've all been waiting for hours to get an autograph from Evan.
All right, break out the coffee. I got to get something. I got to stay up.
You know what? You know, I've brought so many fans to Evan, and she's brought not fucking one to me from her L.A. deadhead fucking audience.
Oh, Bob, you know
that's okay. She comes, you bring them all in one
Evan.
Corporal Ebony.
Dave, will you shut up? I'm muting you, Dave.
All right.
You've been fucking rattling on for fucking
hours. No.
Yeah, no. Dave's been muted. Okay. Evan, I want to make a serious statement. I don't know what you have fans in L.A., but I've seen from the beginning, because we started on your show before James' show, people love Evan. Ionettes love Evan. It's been an amazing fact all the way through.
Well, you know what, Bob? It's because of just all of the
fucking Denny, just a minute. I got to get Denny. Just a minute. Fucking Denny needs to be. He's got a friend there moaning. Okay, sorry, Evan. Start over. What is it?
You know what, Bob? I think that we just have a lot of listeners that are just kind of secreted off and just keep tabs on you and are listening in, and maybe they don't identify themselves, but you have major creds out here in Los Angeles, and people are still trying to get into your dynamic. And so I'm so glad that you have achieved radio, that you are doing this incredible marathon, and to join and to be, you know, a part of a small little part of the Wonder World.
It's been a four-day pajama party. Everybody sitting around being intimate, telling family secrets.
Yeah. It's so good. And just like, you know, whenever, just tuning in. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Tuning in and to hear some of the smorgasbord, you know, that's you're
right,
dishing with your friends and everything.
That's right. And there's different levels of apprehension and excitement. There's one woman, she's going, day 8, day 12. And she says, fuck, I'll never be able to go back to work again. Bob keeps going. This is more fun than working, but I have to go back to work. This is becoming painful.
Completely, man. You hang up, and it's like, what am I missing?
Yeah.
And
you know what happened, Evan? Those that hung up today missed Ion twice.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
So So when Ion comes on, is he coming in to respond to something in particular, or just to do a phone jam, just to come in and say, you know,
it's whatever? It's a non-physical. He does. I always have to bring JW in, and then we contact Ion. But Ion is not limited to that, and he comes in by himself and leaves himself.
My God, you sell. Yeah, no, I've missed that. So I've been some of those, you know, that have unfortunately left the room when you convene. And so, man, and you're recording all of this? You're archiving the whole thing?
Oh, yeah, the whole thing. What's a radio broadcast? You go to Payday on Achieve Radio, and you'll see, you know, November 20th. 24 fucking buttons. Then November 23rd, 24 fucking buttons.
Oh, my God.
Just look at it. You'll never see it again like that. Incredible
and
archive.
Your voice isn't even cracking. What?
That's right. It's not even affected.
Yeah, you're not affected.
This could be the second coming. This really communicates to the average man. That fucking guy's voice doesn't crack. He must be a super being. This could be an unwittingly, by default, second coming.
Then you're going to go spend 5 days in the ocean, man, to rejuvenate.
Oh, yes,
whatever.
I got to regenerate, man. And also I'm missing my TV. Tonight's Monday. Oh. I miss four shows from Sunday night. You get four of them come on. Homeland, Empire Boardwalk Empire, The Good Wife, and Blacklist, and By Any Means. I'm fucking, you know, falling behind.
Oh, I know. Well, you know what? I'm sure you got the TiVo. You know.
No, I don't have that stuff. I don't have that. I've got PrimeWire. It's just a matter of the time because I have to cram in on Thursday and Friday because there'll be another five dumped on next Sunday.
Well, there's Hulu, but forget about you. You're going to catch up on that if you're going to be up for 5 days.
Oh, here's the thing. Here's the problem with catching up. I have to keep religiously doing it because I got to listen to all this other Ion stuff to build up archives for the next show. I only got 22 days of fucking 22 days. I only got 22 days a day. No, I only got 22 hours a day.
Oh, no, that's never enough.
That's not enough.
Never enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, talking about television, real quick before we go for the evergreens and everything, I just saw Skyfall again, Bond. You were talking about how that very much mirrored your days working in intelligence. Could you talk a little bit about that? And Skyfall was the intelligence bureaus eating their own, or, you know, that the,
yes,
that
that's the highest
some of the
level.
Soldiers, that the yeah. soldiers are getting tired about being used. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Any comment?
Well, that's, I generally was a bureaucrat. Not on the desk. I was the one who got the information in the form. I never got into fisticuffs. You know what I mean? I wasn't.
Okay.
What's his name? M. Who is the guy at the head of Bond? It's M is Moneypenny.
Yes.
And Q
no,
is
M.
the
Moneypenny is the secretary, but M is
yes.
the
Q.
Is yeah. Oh, no, Q is the gadget guy. M.
Yes.
Yeah,
so who's the bureaucrat?
The bureaucrat is M. M's at the desk. Is the head of
What's Moneypenny?
Moneypenny is the secretary to M.
Okay, so I was a lower level M because M never goes anywhere. He just gets report. He gives Bond the orders, and Bond goes out and beats people up and gets the stuff. Right? He's the hero.
Right.
I was not capable of that, and it really wasn't like that. Basically, it was just gangs beating each other up. So I'd be the guy that oversee it from the distance and get the report and then send it up to M. So I was one step below M until I became M. I did become M, and then it's all soft. You know, you're just thinking out loud, and all the little minions run around and beat each other up based on some pattern you gave out. And another part of it was just going around looking at new labs. We basically were trying to keep, the Steve Constantin was trying to keep up on what the technologies were to see if there would be an opening for us to get back into the economy. And that's actually what happened. Ion opened it up for us so we could get into the economy on a new level and actually take over because it's the best thing. So we were going around searching for our bosses what labs in that were happening. Like, I was in, Hoffman's lab in April 43 when he took the bike ride. We didn't know that was happening, but we were in the LSD lab because a lot of the prior Scion were involved with the Basel drug company. What's it called? Sandoz.
Okay.
So anyways, so we go around looking, we're like tourists of the leading scientists. And then, as I was saying this to these girls, or to somebody, I spent my later years going around keeping in touch with geniuses or new environments, new scenes.
Right. And who was your favorite genius besides Marshall?
Well, they all are a part. I like LaRouche for what he did. I like McLuhan. I like Zappa. You know, Zappa is the greatest on the music level. What can beat music? So he's probably the greatest, but he was a bit reserved when you were hanging out. Wasn't bad as Dylan. And if you get him in a good mood, Zappa would be like us tonight, a lot of fun. But he often was a workaholic, right? Now, they all were workaholics. I would hang out with the second in command and become a good friend of McLuhan's secretary, Margaret. Because the geniuses were all driven, you know? They weren't socially hanging out.
Right. Very good. Very good.
Who I liked was probably the people who had the most fun hangers-on around them, or aides.
Yeah, you talk a lot about Garrett Dean, right?
Oh, I forgot. Garrett was the fucking fun, the great. I forgot about that, but he wasn't the lab, but he wasn't. They all are aspects of Ion. For walking into a home, and the very vibration of the home affected people, made people cry. It was just like the effect of Ion, you know, in a private session. We got that aspect of Ion through Garrett. So actually, Garrett was the favorite.
Yeah,
I forgot.
Yeah, we talked a lot about it. Yeah.
See, he wasn't a lab. He was a feeling. Right. He was in his environment. London, you can get Sue Bone on here. She'll tell you.
Oh, she knows him? She was there?
Yeah. Sue, well, we were joking. I was claiming Sue. I got, you know, get worked up, start improvising, making up new scenarios. I started accusing Sue of murdering Garrett. Because she's sitting there with the pictures. They're in their five bodies. Garrett's all sick and leaning over, and there's Sue grinning beside him. And I just suddenly reinterpreted the pictures today and the inspiration of all what we were talking about, and suddenly accused Sue of murdering Garrett.
I'm sure she loved that.
She did. She laughed, and laughed. But the pictures, you can see pictures of her in the last days of Garrett.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, oh my gosh. So have you
a good guy? Wait, here. Okay.
The Evergreens?
Hey, Evan. As I think of it, another fun guy to hang out with. I have so many memories in the 70s of being in a car with Dave Wurster. He's sitting up in the passenger front seat smoking dope. Smoking marijuana. Paul Seibel's driving. We got the car radio on. It's 3 in the morning. We're just cruising up and down the empty L.A. highways while Dave tells stories about the psychic LSD stuff he was doing in the 50s.
Oh, my God.
You know, ultimate semi-beatnik late-night romance. Chet Baker, you know, cruising around with Chet Baker at 3 in the morning kind of scene.
Wow. And we were able to do one show with Dave, right? We did one show with Dave Butcher.
We may have done two.
Yeah, that was incredible.
We did one in 93, and we did one in 2005 or something.
I believe you.
Yeah, there's one. Remember, the one in 93, he called up, and he was telling us that the people were making the fires on the hills of L.A. go. No, that would have been David Porter. That's before you. So, yours was one in July 2005, around the time of Croker.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that was fantastic. Really good.
So what you have is the best guy to hang out with. So you had Garrett was the best. Wurster was pretty good. McLuhan was not a guy you hung out with, but he provided Monday night seminars, and you get to hear a lot of very intelligent debate. You know what I mean? And you get to hear his stuff. So he provided that. Zappa was the most fun as an environment, as music. His bands were incredible. And then you have Joe Dunn Sloan was interesting to hang out with. May Bressel, we didn't hang, but I spent a lot of time on the phone with May Bressel. She was a great phone person. Talk for hours.
Right. Oh,
and Dave's
fun.
Heard some of those. I used to record them, and Dave's heard some of them. Dave would go, he'd say, Dave Neufeld, he's here, he'd go, geez, Bob, he did it. It was a little boyish, like, geez, Bob, you just love May. You just fucking, you take May as a hero. You're buttering her up. Remember that, Dave? Where is Dave? He's not responding. Did he get, oh, I fucking muted him. No, I didn't. I didn't mute him. I think he just left.
Okay.
Hey, Susanna's here. We've been waiting for Susanna. She's been absent for 6 fucking weeks and paid dearly. Didn't you, Susanna? You paid. You fucked up.
I sure did. Darn it.
Darn it. You got my email, right? Capital letters, darn. Capital letters, right?
Darn.
No, I must piss you off. I know it hurts. It hurts.
It does. Oh, well.
That yeah, helps. Don't want to dwell. Dave left. He fucking couldn't dominate the fucking creep, so he fucking left. That's sick. He can't be
his. I'm sure he just went to go get a nibble. He'll be back.
Right, but he disconnected.
Because you're going evergreen. Oh, he's
so listen, fuck that. Evan, we're gonna do the fucking candy shit, okay? You might
thank you.
All night. Let's get into it.
Let's now, there's do one, that. I'm gonna shut
there's
up.
There's one
listen.
Section. Yeah. There's one section. I played it for some people yesterday. And then I played it by accident again today. It's played twice, but I can't play it again. Maybe later you'll hear, but I can't do it. So we're gonna move you in. Step in. Maybe I can tell you what was on it, but it was
yeah,
important.
Yeah, give me the cliff notes.
Yeah. Okay, so you guys talk among yourselves. You know, praise Evan or something while I got set up here.
Praise Bob.
Yeah.
But
no, Evan, I do enjoy your show and your interview with Bob and Carolyn. Excellent.
Well, you can't go wrong when you're talking, you know, to the extensions of Ion and talk about workaholics, right?
Yeah. Right,
now
exactly.
They have the juice to make us all stay up.
Oh, I know. I've been going in and out. I haven't been able to stay on as, you know, in an extended time period, which is killing me because just as you said just a little while ago, you're not connected. You wonder, what are you missing? What are you missing? And of course,
and then you find out.
Come up.
Yeah, then you find out what you're missing and it hurts.
Yeah.
well, look, you have all those little nuggets right up there at Achieve Radio, so, you know, mm-hmm. forget about it. Well, that's going to be great.
Bill, yeah, he does a great job of archiving all of the recordings. Fabulous.
Yeah, when he was talking about his setup there, I think I was listening in the other day, and it was just him and I think the gentleman named Rob from Tottenham.
Yes, England. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, was talking about, you know, his terabyte, you know, array of...
Rob was trying to get him to do some marketing. He didn't realize how Bill didn't care because he'd got 9 of them. That was good enough. He didn't need anything else.
Yeah, but, yeah, he definitely has what is needed to be able to capture audio, Bob.
Yeah.
So Bob, how do you like... I'm sorry, go right ahead.
I was going to say that Bill is doing such a great job, and he always has, because he puts up immediately after the hour is up. It's archived. You can go immediately and listen to something if you've missed it.
Well, Suzanne, he keeps up with the software. It's all done automatically.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know
yeah.
that.
But he keeps up with the stuff, so it happens.
How's he holding up, by the way?
He won't admit it. He had an opportunity to fucking have a reading with Ion, and he wouldn't take it.
Why?
He's embarrassing it, but he claimed that someone else asked this question for him. Oh, he wanted to know why Ion knocked out the station on the first day.
Yeah. And did anyone ask
and it got, and Ion said yes. He gave an answer.
Oh.
And what was the answer?
I don't know. It was a bit vague. I'd have to re-listen to it again.
He just had some big digits. His O's and 1's, just, you know, that analog somehow probably of, I don't know, I wonder if non-physical is an analog or digital. I mean, it can invade any medium. Yes, Bob?
What could? Ion?
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking that, I mean, for blowing out a system.
Yes,
that's
no, I can
like
blow out any system.
That's kind of like a denial of service attack when you're, you know, smashing those bits through there.
Right.
I think so. Ion said he did it because they could.
Yes, that's what he
yeah.
did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he said, we want you to realize your power. So he's giving us examples of how you use your power.
And what was Ion's motivation for coming in?
We were playing too much Evergreens, and he wasn't going to have that.
Oh, today? That was the reason today?
Both days.
Oh.
So maybe he'll come in tonight.
He could, yeah.
Well, do I recall that he... You know, that was a question I wanted to ask you, Bob, about the Evergreens and Ion and what Ion thought about the Evergreens. Is Ion completing what the Evergreens...
In the early days, he was respectful and said he was completing them. By a year later, he was saying he doesn't know what the hell state of mind Michael had gotten in to actually do that. It wasn't valid. So Ion goes up and down. It's like a kid.
Okay. So he wasn't saying, or Ion wasn't saying that he didn't. He wasn't validating the information.
Well, we asked the Aryans if they're vampires, and they said yes. There's one. They agree on that. But then the Aryans said it's not like the comic books, though. And Ion, I don't know if it's like the comic books, but he can he digs the TV shows. True Blood.
Certainly are a lot more shows and TV. A lot more attention.
A lot more what?
Attention on vampires and werewolves. It seems like
yeah.
it's becoming a meme of sorts.
That's part of the non-physical leaking through the veil.
And what are they saying by creating vampires and werewolves? What is non-physical saying, and why has it come through in that representation?
I don't know.
Hello.
I'm thinking over this. I'm not here for a minute.
Oh, I'm very good.
Right.
Because, you know, on the radio we're talking about the pathology of some of our fellow Homo sapiens, their bloodletting, and calling them vampires because of how they suck energy and life. And so to hear that it's possibly something related to non-physical, or just want to hear that, how that folds together, how that comes together, if it does. Do you know, Sue?
From what I recall, I seem to remember that vampires are immortal, but that's not the type of eternal life that you want.
Right, and it started with Vlad the Impaler.
Vlad the Impaler.
They sacrificed all their non-physical.
Yeah, it was...
Oh, there's Sarah.
Hey.
Hi. I'm happy to be on with you, Evan. This is the first time I've ever been on when you're on. I keep missing your segments, and I've listened to your show. And I think that one of the reasons all the Ionettes like you so much is the segments where Ion is conversing with you. You seem to have the magical ability to draw out so much information from Ion and the Ion.
It is so much fun to talk to these wells of deep, profound knowledge, and just to be able to ask anything and everything, and that's very kind of you to say that. I kind of am this little inquisitor and just want to know, and how great to have a Bob, Ion, and Carolyn to just throw whatever up against the wall and they'll explain it. I mean, isn't that fantastic for you guys, Ion Dome, you know, and why you keep coming back and chewing on it, because there is so much, so much to it. So, pleasure meeting you guys.
And you too. Was the first time you met Bob, I watched the video of the UFO Congress, and I saw that you were there in the line to ask a question, I believe. Was that the first time you came in contact with Bob?
Yes. It was in Mesquite. Yeah, Mesquite, Nevada.
Then how did it transpire from there? Did you hang around and wait for him and talk to him, or did he see you?
It was so funny. I was sitting in the crowd next to this older woman, she was really, really cool. And she goes, you know this guy up here? His name is Bob. Well, he's 93 years old or something like that. And I look at him, and he looks like, 40, 39, 40 something. I'm like, no way, you know. And so she's like, yeah, you have to hear his lecture. And so, definitely was there when he was pulling out his pages on the Boodians and all of that, and talking a little bit about his background, and, you know, forget about it. And he was there with Scott, and who else was there? It was Scott. They were just at lunch, and I just came over and introduced myself and asked if we could do an interview. And I brought some recording, like a little tape machine back then, you know, a little cassette tape machine, and just was, you know, absolutely blown away just with the his physical history, you know, from France and beyond. So, yeah, Mesquite. I mean, it was a fantastic conference in a very dead place on the planet, but it came alive that weekend. It's great.
How long ago was that, Evan?
98, 99, something like that.
August 17th. I spoke on August 17th, 99. I was there for a week. Evan interviewed me, and then we never saw each other again for years, but she called me up in March 2000 to say her radio show started, and I went on. Well, you played the interview, and then I did this. Then I was part of a series for about a year. So you'd interview me once a month, and that was 2000.
It was my first show on was Bob.
Yeah, which was the interview from Mesquite. The one you did in Mesquite.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then I came back a month later, and we went for about a year. And then I probably met you. I didn't get back to L.A. till 2004, and I would have met you then.
Right. Yeah, that was a... Yeah, absolutely.
So you've been saying,
just...
I just was wanting to interject to Bob. You've been saying, or it's been said you were 93 since that time.
No. The lady probably said 83 or something, you know. They...
No, she said, she really exaggerated it.
Did she?
Yeah, she did. Because, I mean, that was, I guess, the buzz around the conference at that time.
Right.
Look at this eternal wonder, because you guys were there at the D-cell. That was a thing.
Yeah.
You guys had the D-cell at that time. And so people were like, oh, my God, really? Are you going to bring it? What is it? And he brought it out, and it looked like a rock with some holes.
It was a little rock. A little dirty rock. Pet rock.
People were like, what?
And, you know, we were low then, so I only had some old dirty ones.
And people, I swear, people wanted for you to auction that off, man.
Yeah.
You could have made a few... Grand.
No, I offered, Evan, I offered to auction it off, and I did, and nobody wanted it. And
really
Ted took it.
Well, with the dirty rock with the holes in it.
Right, 9 ounces of the D-cell will be ready within 6 months. And from that point on, for the next 5 years, Ted Lohman reported every year. I'm driving up the wall.
Yeah, Lohman,
he's the one. They'd all come up to him, is the D-cell ready? And he'd have to say no, and they'd go through it every fucking conference for 5-6 years.
Exactly.
And then he told me about 2006, he called me up and he said, Bob, I just want to tell you, I'm refusing to talk about it anymore. I said, yeah, don't worry about it. We don't have it. It's all over. Fuck it. You know. And then 2 years later, 3 years later, we got the drops. See, I'm waiting for those people. Will they someday see us and remember? And then they'll feel better about me. Oh, Bob finally came through 20 years later.
I wonder if any of them listen to your show now. They might, because...
They might, but they don't keep in touch. It's all just vampiric, you know, listening and consuming information. They take no responsibility. Like, they get it, they should be... I get an in. They get an insight, and they should call up and talk about it.
Yeah, I think they get a little, you know, intimidated.
Yeah.
A little intimidated. They don't know how to fit the chart. They don't know how to get in the chart or get the chart, you know.
What happened today three times, Evan. Matthew arranged for three different women to be on the show, and all three had an identity crisis and ran away.
Yeah, yeah. Performance anxiety, right?
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah. How close are you to having everything queued?
About 5 seconds. Just getting, I'm getting it set up, and then I'll mute you guys and we'll start hearing it. 4710.
Always like asking this, where are you guys, Sue? Where are you at?
Dallas.
And Dallas.
Yeah.
Dallas is great fashion. I'm sorry. I love that cowboy.
Sorry, hold on. I was on mute. I haven't said hello yet.
Oh, hi.
I don't think. Hello, Evan.
Hey.
Did you just say Allison? It's me to say Allison, or am I starting to hallucinate because I've been up for 5 days?
Well, there you go.
You guys are claiming you've been up for 5 days. Bullshit. You've been sleeping.
I'm like Carolyn was saying today. She's tired just being around you.
That's right. She thinks she's somehow supporting me, and she's getting tired. Either giving
Probably
me energy
pathetic.
Or something.
I know.
Okay. Here we go, guys. I'm muting. We're going to start. This is about.
Bye, Evan.
Bye.
Yep. Bye, everybody.
All participants are now muted.
Absolutely.
All right, I want to move on to some other things where you only get 15 minutes left. Thank you, Evergreens, on that. Some quick questions, and then we can see what we can develop. Was J. Edgar Hoover murdered in May 1972?
No, died of natural causes.
Right. There was a Frontline PBS special on the October Surprise, which is pointing the finger at Bush. This was on April 16th, and there was some coverage in the major newspapers about it. Is this the October Surprise story that the EG said would come out in 1991?
Yes.
Is much more going to come from it?
Yes.
But Bush will ride it out?
Almost. Yes. He ride this out.
Was George Bush in Paris in October 1980 organizing the delay of the release of the hostages until after Reagan was in?
Not personally in that city, but that he had operatives? Yes.
So he organized that?
Yes.
What could he be... Is that treasonous what he did?
Absolutely not. It was the best thing that could be done. It was very clever. You see, it is not being seen from the perspective of those who have thought this out. To say, hold off giving the hostages back until the election is complete.
In exchange for arms.
In exchange for arms. It appears very callous. But in actuality, the Iranians themselves were playing hardball. They were making no decisions other than holding the
hostages.
They were intractable. They were accepting no overtures. None. Now, what was done, and this is to George Bush's credit, his view was give the Iranians the impression that they are in control. And here is how it's done. We will say to them, all the hostages, which they are doing in any event, until the election is over, so that you can make us look good. The Iranians bit that. Oh, they swallowed that hook, line, and sinker. They said, now, we have that situation created where they owe us. Now, how can we capitalize on that? Now, Bush and certain others did this very well. They said, what do you want? Do you want armaments? And the Iranians said, oh, yes, please. Because armament supplies have been drying up.
Was that said after they were elected?
That was said before.
Yeah.
Now, what was done, and it was brilliant, I understand it. It gave the Iranians the belief that they were, in actuality, manipulating on a worldwide basis. They were not. They were, we assure you, duped into letting go of hostages for arms. A good trade, we would suggest. But what was also created by this was Bush's other shoe, which was, if you do this again, if you do try to take hostages, particularly American hostages, we will, and we have the power to do it, make sure that you have no more arms, except those which you would be able to smuggle in small amounts into the country. You will have no spares. You will have no backup. And we will let it be known that there will be a total, utter embargo created as that one that you were experiencing. And the Iranians, they were suffering, so they believed, from a lack of arms. And here was an opportunity. Consider what they had. They had hostages. That's all they had. But they could trade them for the belief that they were in control and for arms. And Bush, in a brilliant stroke, made sure that they swallowed this hook, line, and sinker. And they did. Now, the way that it get told, there would be someone saying, how callous. But the full story come out. The Iranians were duped. Royally would be the best description.
And this will come up before the 92 election?
Oh, yes, indeed.
And Bush, therefore, will win the debate in image?
Absolutely.
All right.
And what did the Iranians end up with? What did they have, in truth? Modern arms? No.
So, all right, now we go into the Iran-Contra scandal. The EG said that Reagan initiated that to get the new round of hostages out, right?
Yes. Reagan initiated, under the advice of Bush and those surrounding. Reagan put this cleverly done. But realize, Reagan initiate, but Reagan didn't think. It was not his thinking. It was his initiation. He was the one that said, this is to be done.
This is cleverly done. Mm. Yeah, that's why on July 13th, 1985, I think it was the day of the Live Aid concert, Reagan went into the hospital. And some research shows that was the weekend while he was in hospital that Bush came and proposed this idea.
Exactly.
And he was actually, Bush was president at that point. He'd taken over while Reagan was in the hospital.
Yes.
So while he was in the hospital, Bush proposed it. Reagan agreed. And then things, then the Iranians felt they had, they could blackmail Reagan. Remember that?
Well, that indeed so. But the point is, that was what they were led to believe. They were led to believe that they had power. And all that was necessary was to push this. Rather, the problems of the situation than letting it out that the United States had totally and completely duped the Iranians. It was better to hide certain things, and let it be known.
Right. Now, the EGs told me that many people were murdered when the Iran-Contra scandal started to surface in 86 and 87. What about the people who lost their lives and got caught in the crunch of this scandal and the previous deals?
No, there were other ramifications in there. You have to understand that the United States, they're not fools. They're not easily drawn into something. There are brilliant thinkers involved in this. Brilliant.
Yes. As an example, Richard Perle? The people we see on TV, are they some of these brilliant thinkers?
Yes, they are.
Hmm?
Yes.
They're on the CNN show Crossfire often.
Yes.
A lot of those people. So they're known, some of these.
Yes. Well, the point is, what has been disturbing the United States has been for the past 10 years is the continual destabilization of the Mideast. The reason that they put arms into Saddam Hussein's hands was to put a balance against that which existed with Iran.
Yes.
Now, even to the point that distastefully, with great distaste, the United States supplied arms to that which they knew long before was a despot. They knew it. But what they had, because of all of that which was there to be balanced, and to give even that despot, and to give arms. Well, the United States knew it would come down to a showdown sometime. They knew this.
With Hussein.
With Hussein. They believed at one particular point that he would attack Saudi Arabia. Well, that's why the United States is so heavily armed Saudi Arabia, make sure there was a balance of power here.
Yeah, they started that in the early 80s.
Yes. Well, it was not expected until 2 to 3 years ago that Kuwait would be a target. So therefore certain things were done to strengthen Kuwait. But Kuwait let itself down. It did not expect that Hussein would go against his word. Until a few days before the attack, Hussein was saying how he would not ever do this. And they believed him. The United States knew he would. And they knew that should he move, it would be necessary to reinforce Saudi Arabia so that Saudi Arabia could then move into attack formation against Iraq. However, it was one of the other scenarios was brought into play. What has been shown is that the United States is stronger than even its ability to supply arms.
All right, thank you. I'd like to move into a couple of...
There's not a great amount of time remaining, so there are plenty of four.
All right. Okay, I'm going to go to another recording. Any comment? Oh, well, I got to demute you guys.
All participants are now unmuted.
Eben?
You know what, it is interesting to hear him compliment the Bushes and compliment Shnukarim, the Iranian Islamists. That's what's just so fascinating about your conversations and your tapes. That's the objective historical middleman that you're just assessing these facts through. And so... I think that's very interesting in him saying that these are like some, you know, these brilliant political minds. I guess we're supposed to be, proud, but I think I think that was a very interesting bit. Why were you interested in that part of history?
I wanted to play the Hoover thing, and it was real short. It was just the question. Yeah. I see Hoover. I'm going to play Hoover, and just said, was he murdered? No. And
oh, yeah, that's right.
I could have stopped it, but I thought, well, I've been here the cold yeah. logic of this. Now, a lot of the TV shows and movies are up to that level now. They're not so black and white. It's very complex, and they show that the police are as bad as the criminals, almost, because everybody's all fucking all intertwined now.
Right.
And so that's the way it was politically 30 years ago. But
and
the,
so we sit there, yes, sir.
Evan, listen, but you notice he predicted Bush would win the election in 92, and that didn't happen.
Somebody said it did.
No, I said it didn't happen, but... Did that come out?
What do you mean? Yeah, right. Do you agree, somebody, that they said Bush was going to win the election?
No, I was agreeing that you said that I heard that the Evergreen said that it would come out, his brilliant
yes.
thinking.
But didn't he say that there was a debate, that he'd win the debate in the election or something?
And that he'd win the debate, exactly.
Which implied win the election, right?
I think he said that he'd win the election. And
yeah, and I'm pointing that out to Evan. He's wrong on the election.
Right.
Mm.
I'm trying to teach you guys how it goes. So let's just listen to me, because you just come up with theories and we'll waste time. The thing is,
yeah.
Pointing out how he mispredicted it, but just before the election, because things he predicts Clinton. But the thing is that the elections are the hardest thing for the Evergreens to predict, because that is the hot spot of human consciousness, and things change in the last minute. So you have to say, okay, oh, wow, they blew it. But actually, at that point, Bush was winning. Then Clinton did well. Then Clinton fucked up. Then Bush was ahead. And then Bush was down, and then Clinton gets to the last lap, you know? I never used to take I would ask them for the record, what do you say is going to win the election? And they'd say, and I ignore it, because most of the time it would be wrong, because things would change so much. So the real lesson was, it was very hard for whatever the Evergreens are, to predict the elections, because it was so volatile. Okay,
yeah.
Now you can speculate.
Well,
okay,
I was just
so,
wanting to ask about, did that come out, what the Evergreens said would come out, and
I don't think so. I don't think it did come out.
I don't remember any of that coming out. Okay.
It's all a blur. It's almost like the Evergreens don't understand how fucking confusing the information society was going to become.
Well, what part come out? Which part came out?
That the Americans won.
His brilliant thinking about letting the
that
they won.
Yeah, that if it was said, it was a press conference, it didn't have any staying power. In the information overload environment, nothing has any staying power.
Well, I know that. No, I mean, the October surprise was really big, you know, news. And
no, it was all about, it was news, but it was all about, holy shit, they committed treason. And it never come out that the October surprise was worthwhile. That never came out.
Yeah, I mean, we never got access. They never got to justify, because they would, you know... It would be treasonous, but certainly a lot of people just looked at the idea of arms to terrorists, you know. And see, that's the echo chamber it stayed in.
Well, see, that's the TV shows, they show you the complexities of anything. And Evergreens are aware of the complexities of the bureaucrats. They have to come up with ideas, they got to compromise, they get all fucked up, make mistakes. I mean, I played something the other day where Reagan was totally duped by the Iranians in the first phase. No, later phase, in 86. Anyways, it's all mixed up. I shouldn't have played it. With this stuff, I would do it 6 months later, do it again. It was always on the fly, changing constantly. But it was always useful at the time. But it had no staying power.
You know what, Bob, may I ask, why wasn't Hoover killed? Or assassinated.
Okay.
How come he escaped that after, you know, having all the files and starting all the dirty, you know, dirty
tricks? Okay, well, that's what we're going to do Hoover now. So maybe this will start to answer that question. Okay? So here we go.
Okay.
We're going to go into the Kennedy assassination. Yeah. Anybody got anything else to say one more time?
No, go for it.
Okay. I'll mute you guys.
All participants are now muted.
The following is a recording.
I'm still setting it up. Set it up. Okay.
Was J. Edgar Hoover, like he was the original impulse for the John F. Kennedy assassination, was he the impulse for the murder of Martin Luther King?
No.
Was he the impulse for the murder of Robert Kennedy?
No.
What is the difference between the John Kennedy and the later assassinations? Who implemented them and why were they done?
Realize the Kennedy, John himself, was considered by Hoover, who considered himself a super patriot, but Kennedy was not a patriot. Kennedy would be continuing on that vein, and because of that, this ran counter to Hoover. Realize that Hoover put into motion those things that worked with Hoffa. That Hoffa and others made sure that there would be an assassination in capsule form. That is it. Now, following this, realize that Robert Kennedy was considered by the Hoffa's group to be also fair game, because Robert was threatening to disband much of the Teamster organization and those things associated with it.
When he was Attorney General.
Yes. So therefore, since they had permission, in essence, to do this with Kennedy, that they then took, they did not ask, request, they took that avenue to assassinate Robert. You see? That was strictly through Hoffa.
So that the original five co-conspirators with Hoffa were not all of them were involved in the RFK assassination. That was a lower down offer, or one faction of the five.
Yes.
Mainly the Mafia, the Hoffa gang.
I realize that the reason for Martin Luther King's assassination was that Martin Luther King was considered by certain factions to be extremely influential in bringing out the black vote. That because of him, there would be vast registration drives, and that the black influence on voter demographics across the country would shift very familiar patterns. You see?
Yes.
So therefore, it was then created by those in opposition, not through Hoffa, not through Hoover, but through those in opposition, and that's somewhat of an ad hoc group, you see, that they would then bring this up as a racial matter with other groups that it would be a racial slur was promulgated, that Martin Luther King was going to secretly overthrow the government of the United States, which of course was not his intent. But that was the information that was fed to the radical groups that got Ray to do the shooting.
Yeah, the KKK extreme racist groups.
Yes. You see, they were triggered, but who triggered them would be best described as an ad hoc group. Now, the three killings not linked.
So that the group, you know, the group that organized the assassination of Martin Luther King and create the impulse, no overlap with the Hoffa group,
no.
The Robert Kennedy or the John Kennedy?
No.
So the three separate. Now, did Ray do the shooting?
Yes.
But how come there's evidence to show that he wasn't there and you know, he was in his car and the shots came from another part behind the building?
No, Ray did this. Much of the information was part of the disinformation process.
Right. There was this character named Jack Youngblood who showed up and said he did the shooting to several journalists. That was part of the disinformation.
Yes.
He was part of the assassination group, but yes. He's trying to confuse it.
Yes.
So Ray knows he did it, but he's trying to take advantage of the confusion to make himself look like he was a patsy.
Yes.
To get out.
Yes.
To get out of jail. I see.
If he were so lily white, why did he flee? Why was it arranged that he would be able to flee? Realize that Ray had an escape route.
Yeah.
And that the escape route was prepared for him. Why, if he was so innocent, why? Now, possibly it could be argued that this was in itself disinformation. But no. The look would have surrounded that following his capture. That was when the disinformation to add an element of doubt in here.
Was this ad hoc group basically from the south? Southern United States?
Yes. South and eastern.
Southeastern, yeah.
South and eastern.
The east coast, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So if there is figures who overlap, what's one of them?
Overlap?
Ed Butler might overlap. He's a character. That is a coincidence or part of the disinformation?
Part of the disinformation.
Yeah. Did this group called Permandex, named in the Torbett document and in Garrison's investigation, which had some members in Montreal, were they part of any three of the assassinations?
Well, they were associated with the first.
Yeah.
But not with the second or the third.
Right. Okay. Is there anything the Evergreens would like to tell me more about those assassinations that I haven't asked?
To realize that why Kennedy was killed. Jack Kennedy was killed for a reason, and that was that, and the process in which it was done was copied. The process copied does not mean that there was collusion between the three associations.
Yes.
Now, and it's important to realize that the process is itself very simple. You have the person with the idea that sets up a group, that sets up another group that does the action. What you're looking for is a fringe group as the second group to handle that, and you give them permission, you give them the money, you give them the opportunity, and they themselves do it for their reasons. You see?
Yeah, they control the third group that does it.
Yes. So therefore, it's important to realize why John Kennedy killed was because the initiator saw Kennedy as lacking patriotism, being a true American, being, and the best description is too worldly wise, you see?
Yes.
Now, the reason for Robert Kennedy was because he was going to literally blow the lid off the Union movement in the United States, showing clearly that its mafia links were not only strong, but had been organized to be strong and were organized to continue.
Did Robert Kennedy know why his brother was assassinated?
He knew somewhat, but did not know the full story.
He didn't suspect Hoover?
No. No one suspected Hoover.
But he suspected the mafia.
Oh, he believed that it could be the mafia linkage in it.
Yeah.
But that was not provable. Did not know much. Well, the point of Robert Kennedy's assassination was because he was going to expose one of the biggest sweetheart deals that had been created.